If you are a fan of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast and would like to help support the show, there's a great way that you can do that and start a new fashion trend. We have a new merchandise page on the website, which features t-shirts and hoodies that are available for sale on Amazon. Just click on merchandise in the top menu and all of the links will be there, or go directly to divebarrockstar.com/merchandise. Get started early on your Christmas shopping at divebarrockstar.com. Welcome to the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, a show exploring the lives of professional musicians of all types, touring musicians, recording artists, songwriters, engineers, bar bands, wedding bands, and anyone making their living in the music industry. Whether you've dreamed of being a professional or you already are one, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Eric Baines, and I hope that you not only find some entertainment here, but also some helpful tips, trade secrets, and ideas that will help you achieve your dreams. Well, it's exciting times. It's February, and Chicago is about to get back on the road, which always makes me happy because I like hanging out with those dudes, and I like to work. So it's exciting. But it's also nice to have the time to do more podcasts because I really love doing this. And it, not only is it a chance for me to showcase my friends and colleagues and people that I really respect and think are doing a great job, but I'm hoping also to inspire those of you that are wanting to be in the music business or you know, are struggling in the music business enough, because these are real stories with, you know, so it's real information from people that have lived this stuff. It's not something they read in a book. This is all real stuff, you know? So my goal is to inspire people and help in any way that I possibly can. So if you are actually needing an extra push or some extra advice, or maybe you're in a stuck point in your career and you just need some fresh ideas as to something new to do, you know, reach out to me and I'd love to help. You know, I'd love to help either through, I don't know, an online lesson, or just I'll write you back, you know, and you can reach out on Instagram, the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, or you can reach out on Facebook. I have three pages there. I have Eric Baines, the artist page. I have the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast page, and Eric Baines, my personal page. And I'm also starting to do TikTok. So it's new. I don't have a whole lot of videos up yet, but it's just another platform if that's the place that you like to hang out and where you would like to get a hold of me. So anyways, whatever your platform of choice, let me know your story, let me know how it's going out there, and let me know if there's anything I can do for you. My guest today is a dear friend. He's a multi-instrumentalist in the truest sense of the word. And I don't know anyone else who plays as many instruments as he does. He's also a composer, a songwriter, and a producer. He's scored TV shows like ABC's American Coco and Showtime's The Good Lord Bird. He's played on American Idol, The Voice, The Grammys, later with Jules Holland, and Glee. He's performed, recorded, and toured with such artists as Dolly Parton, John Fogerty, Blake Shelton, Brandi Clark, and Lisa Marie Presley, which we will talk all about. And I met him while we were playing with Dwight Yoakam, which he is still doing. And we had babies at the same time during the pandemic, and we've done a ton of gigs together all across America. So please enjoy my conversation with Jameson Hollister. Dive Bar Rockstar. So you are coming to us here from Memphis, correct?
From Oxford, Mississippi, right?
Oxford, now. Mississippi.
Yes.
Cool. And you've been spending a lot of time there.
I have. Yes. We bought a house here. We have renovated it. This is my studio. It's it's kind of like a basement room that kind of like a little shotgun room. It's cool, man. It's kind of goes for a while and holds tons of stuff. And it's been great. It's like it's a bit of a little oasis in the Southeast to have like a small Southern college town, but have like tons of artists and musicians, and especially writers. So it's great, man. It's just, it's a fun, it's a great community. And I lived here before we moved to LA, and we're back. You know, it's good. It's a good place to raise the kid.
Yeah, right. Yes, because we, it was like me and you and Dwight all had babies together. I was a little later, but
not that much.
yeah.
We were all in it together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you go from talking about like guitar amps to talking about like, so what kind of stroller you got, man?
I know, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, that was like all pandemic babies.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show today and talk to us, one of many, many reasons, but because you spent some time playing with Lisa Marie Presley, and you know, she just passed away, and tragically, way too early. And so I don't know, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts and your experience with her, because she, you know, I remember seeing her on David Letterman when her first record came out, and thinking, and just thinking, this is so cool. How do I get on that gig? You know, but I think at the time, I don't even know if I lived in Denver or if I lived in LA at the time, but she just always seemed really cool. It was like, oh, you could have easily gone so many different ways as the daughter of the most famous musician ever, you know, but this music is cool. You know, like you picked a direction that seemed, you know, authentic, I guess, you know, genuine.
Yes. You know, so when she first came out on the scene, I think, I don't want to speak out of turn about stuff I don't totally know about, but I think like Linda Perry was very involved. Mm. And I think she like co-wrote a bunch of stuff with her, or like Linda wrote a bunch of stuff, and you know, she was doing that like, you know, rock, straight ahead rock thing. And then when I played with her, she had just done a record with T-Bone Burnett. So it was like totally like dark, thuddy drums and steel guitar and upright bass. It was, you know, with tons of tremolo guitar. It was super cool. It was like kind of rockabilly in a weird modern way, but then just totally Americana. It was a really satisfying, cool gig, and the music was awesome.
And that's the Storm and Grace record?
Yes, Storm and Grace. It's a beautiful record, man. It's really, really fantastic. I listened to it the other day. I was like, man, God, that was a great record to play on. That was so much fun.
That's so you played on the record as well?
Mm-mm.
No, you...
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. Yes, I did not play on the record. I meant the tour of the record.
Right.
Greg Lease played on the record.
Got you. Another phenomenal pedal steel. So you're a multi-instrumentist. So you mainly played pedal steel with her situation.
I did pedal steel. I did kind of like second guitar, and I did mandolin. And it wasn't on the record, but I did some fiddle as well.
That's awesome. So she definitely used all your talents.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, we've talked about her in the past, and like it seems like it was a really, really great gig, and she was really nice to work with.
Yes, man, she could not have been lovelier. She was always so just like kind, like was always like asking questions, like, you know, what was it? You know, you grew up in Mississippi, you know, like, tell me about that. You know, tell me about your family. Tell me about your wife. Tell me, you know, all this kind of stuff, like questions that, you know, a lot of times you go into work for folks and, you know, you're just working, you know, but she was always just kind of like off to the side, just kind of going, huh, I wonder about that. Like, and always so genuinely kind, always truly, you know, we went to her house and, in England at the time, where she was primarily living, we went there to go do some dates, and she was like, all right. So we got to her house, which was cool. Also, it's like, you know, we went to her house, and right, she was like, hey, I'm going to make y'all some sandwiches. And she made us like, you know, like Caprese sandwiches. I mean, like, so cool and sweet. She's like, I found this, you know, olive oil I really like at this market, you know, I mean, just like totally down to earth, could not be kinder, nicer, you know, all that. So yeah, I have nothing but the best of things to say about her.
Wow, that's so cool. Because there's another situation where she could go either way, you know, like she
absolutely,
you know, when you meet people like that, it shouldn't be, but it's almost a little surprising when they're nice.
Yeah, it's like, wow, you were remarkably totally grounded and normal and nice and kind and genuine and sincere, all that. Like, we, you know, we would, she would always have these like fun birthday parties in LA and like, you know, always invited us and all that. And it was always really nice to my wife and really nice to, you know, my family would come out to gigs and stuff. She was always super cool. So, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. And like musically, how was she, hands-on at all, or was she kind of just, you know, when it's time to go, she's ready to sing her parts, but you know, was it easy to work with her musically as well?
Yeah, man, she was great. She, there was no ego, no nothing like that. Just like, you know, she would, you know, we would get to like a rehearsal, and you know, just like you do, you get there earlier, usually before the artist, and you know, you're sitting there, you know, just tuning your guitars and setting up amps and, you know, getting sounds and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, she shows up and, you know, we'll do some songs, and then we had order burritos and you know, just talk and chat and hang out for a bit. And then we would do a little bit more, then go home, you know, that. And then, you know, gigs, we would, you know, do a sound rehearsal. She would, you know, get her ears right the way she wanted them per the venue. And, you know, then we'd be done. I mean, it was totally normal. I mean, it's just a normal artist band, you know, relationship as far as all that goes and stuff.
Easy and fun.
It was easy and fun. And, you know, like before the last song, we would always like take a shot of tequila. we would always like end the set with Tom Petty and take a shot of tequila and just rock out. And it was fun, man.
It sounds like it was pretty normal, but like, was there in the background, is there this, oh my God, this is Elvis Presley's kid, you know, like as far as you were concerned, or like,
not for me so much. Like I was always kind of like, man, she's, you know, she's her own person, you know, she's doing her own thing. We didn't like cover Elvis songs, you know, like she didn't want to do that. You know, she wanted to do her own thing. And, you know, everyone was always totally, you know, respectful and cool and understanding of that. And I don't remember any like specific stories, but like she would, you know, occasionally talk about her father, but not really, you know, I mean, it was always just kind of like, here's what we're doing right now, you know?
Right.
But, you know, I mean, people came to shows, yeah. You know, they expected some, you know, it's gotta be weird to go out there and play a show and some dude on the front row is dressed up like your deceased father.
Right.
Know, like that's weird. You know, it's hard. So I really felt sorry for her in a lot of ways like that, you know? So, you know, she had to trudge through a lot of, you know, of mud to be able to do what she did with that. So,
yeah, I was going to ask that too. It's like, it was the music received? Cause I, you know, I was on Spotify listening to a bunch of her music and the numbers aren't great, you know, as far as
distance,
and like kind of surprisingly low for somebody of her stature, you know, and which is unfortunate because they're great records.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I wonder how that, you know, comes across live too. Like, were people more, and I guess you kind of answered it a little bit, but were people more there to see the daughter of Elvis Presley or there to really take in her music, you know?
It was a mixed bag. You know, there's fans of hers who just like adored her and they were at like, you know, every show they could make it to. Yeah. You know, we see that with like Dwight's gang. You show up and you're like, man, that same person has been in like every Texas show, you know, that you do. It's like they are huge fans and that's awesome, you know? And, but, then there's always going to be the loudest voice, the most dressed like Elvis person out there. You know, you can't hide those folks too well. So.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about all the people who are like, I've seen Dwight 32 times, you know, and so it happens with Chicago as well, obviously.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I bet y'all got some long-term fans, man.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I first saw him in 1968, you know, and like, it's crazy.
Oh yeah. And do they like have like very specific, like set list questions and stuff like that?
Yeah, in request, you know, that's
request. Yeah.
That's the other problem with a band of 55 years and like numerous hits. You're never going to make everybody happy. Like, we'd be there all night, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so, God. And because, so we came out to that Memphis show, mm-hmm. and which was totally sold out, totally awesome. Y'all destroyed, y'all melted all the faces. And I got, it was a cold night, so we needed to be melted.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
But man, it's just, you forget. It's just hit after hit after hit. It's just, I mean, just nonstop. It's so impressive. It's such a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun, man. I'm glad. It's so nice to hear, once again, just wrapping up, I guess, about Lisa.
Yeah.
She was a great person, and it's so cool that you had the kind of privilege to spend time with her and play her music. Didn't she like invite you? Like, there's something about your honeymoon.
Yes, man. This, you know, I posted something on social media about it because I was like, you know, I don't usually, like, with some of my family's died, I don't, you know, I'm so bad at posting stuff, and I get sad, and I just don't like to share a whole lot sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, but with this, I was like, this poor woman has just been dragged through tabloid mud her whole life, and just people, all these opinions, all these stories and rumors and whisperings and gossip and all that. I was like, I just want to set the record straight to at least a small number of people, you know, who will see whatever I write, you know, and just like, you know, friends and family and stuff like that. So the story is, we had planned our wedding date. And then I got, you know, the email, it's like, here's the tour dates. And I was like, oh baby, we have a problem.
Oh shoot.
Either I go and, you know, do these dates and, you know, cause we, you know, we need money right now. And, I either have to go do this or like sub this out or something like that. But, you know, I think I should probably do these dates. It'd probably be the best thing. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. So we're like, all right, let's just change the wedding date. Who cares? Right. It's just a date. So we changed it. And then later I was talking to Lisa, and it's after some show, and she was like, so y'all like moved your wedding date? I was like, yeah, you know, we just, you know, you had the dates, and, you know, we were able to, we had enough time. We only sent out, you know, a few save the dates, and like, you know, then we, you know, sent out a new save the date, and it's, you know, it is what it is. It's fine. You know, we're in the, if McGee had, you know, had some project pop up, you know, then we would have done the same thing for her, you know, it is what it is. And, she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That's horrible. But you know, thank you. And then like, the next day she was like, you know, listen, I was thinking, you know, I want to do something for y'all. You know, how would you like to, you know, stay? I have a house in Hawaii. Do you want to go there for your honeymoon or something? And I was like, yes. She's like, yeah, you know, fly you there too. You know, I got, you know, all these airline points and stuff. I can just fly you there. And I was like, oh my God, yes. I mean, just so casual with it, just like, and just, and so she's like, well, how long do you want to stay? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, I mean, as long as you want, I don't care. You know, wow. until I go to stay there, you know, obviously, but I was like, well, I don't know, 10 days. She's like, sure. Cool. Just send me the dates. And I mean, it was just like so sweet and normal and casual and just genuinely kind. So we went from being like, oh, you know, what are we going to do for a honeymoon, to having like this like dream honeymoon that she gave us, you know, like I wouldn't have had that otherwise. Even if we had gone to Hawaii, we wouldn't have been able to have that experience at that nice of a house, you know, in a nice place, and be able to go, you know, rent a car and do all these extra things that go horseback riding and all these extra things we were able to do because she did that. So there's just like the softest place in my heart, you know, forever for her, you know, for doing such a kind gesture for us.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's so cool.
It is so amazing.
Wow. And, you know, we've all worked for many big artists. That's not a usual occurrence. You know, that's
no,
no. That's a very special thing.
It is a very special thing to invite you into her home. I mean, that's her house too. You know, I mean, it's not just like a, you know, VRBO. I mean, she didn't rent that thing out. I mean, that was like her vacation home. She spends a lot of time there, you know? So anyhow, it was just a truly one of the most touching, kindest gestures anyone's ever, you know, done for me.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a great story. It's a great story too, because like it also illustrates on another note what it is to be a musician and like, hey, when the gig comes, you got to move your wedding.
You have to do what you have to do, man. I mean, how many, God, the countless friends' weddings I've missed, the countless, you know, so many sacrifices you have to make in order to have this lifestyle and to be able to do this job. And because, you know, like you said, when it comes, you got to take it, you know, and you say no too many times, people quit asking.
Right. Yeah, so, that's exactly right. Yeah, I've had so many friends talk to me like, I want to do a road gig. And like, okay, I'll keep you in mind. And then it comes up and I'm like, hey, man, there's a tour, but it leaves Friday, you know? You know?
Yes.
Well, I can't do that. Well, that's what it is, man. That's how this works. You know?
This is how it works. Someone dropped out. Someone's, you know, got like a kid on the way or some cataclysmic thing or got another tour. And they had to drop out, and it happens like that, you know?
Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And we met playing with Dwight Yoakam, who you're currently still playing with, right?
Yes, sir.
That's cool. And that probably was another one. In fact, I kind of know because I was there, but that came up quickly.
Yeah. I mean, they all do. And it did come up quickly. And it's funny because, you know, I think if you had asked me before I moved to LA, like what's one of your just like total, you know, dream gigs, like, you know, that would definitely have been on the, you know, the hit list. You know, it's like, I mean, Dwight Yoakam, hell yeah. Of course I want to play with Dwight Yoakam. Wow. I love his music. And, you know, on top of that, I get to do all the, you know, I get to play with all my toys. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, that's so cool. And like, I mean, if you were a fan, you probably knew, but I think a lot of people don't realize that Dwight's an LA guy, you know?
Yes. Like,
so you come out here and end up on that dream gig that maybe you weren't even looking for because you didn't know that. I don't know. I didn't know that, you know? But then once you become, you know, once you know him, then you're like, oh, well, this is all about LA and California and Bakersfield and stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have saw that coming either. I mean, especially me, I'm not really a country guy. You know, when I got the gig, it was like, wow, I never expected to be here, you know?
Yeah. Like on top of it being a country gig, it's not like a Nashville pop country gig where you're basically just like, you know, you're a pop guy. It's not like going from playing, you know, just basically another pop gig with, you know, more country lyrics and, you know, like some twangs here and there. And, you know, I mean, Dwight is like country.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there's no tracks. There's no like 5-string bass. I mean, it is.
Yeah. And it's a very, well, beyond that too, like, which I learned after being in the band for 5 years, like when someone says I like country music now, I'm like, that means nothing to me. You like Texas country? You like, you know, like,
and, oh yeah.
And Dwight is a very specific niche, even within country music. Like it's because the one thing that I related to as a kind of rock pop R&B guy is like, it's loud, it's rocking, it's Bakersfield, you know, it's
electric. Oh yeah.
When you see it live, it's not pretty per se. You know what I mean? Like it's loud rocking country, you know?
Oh yeah. It's like totally like, honky tonk music on an amplified scale.
Yeah.
Like on a, you know, macro scale, you know, it's not, we keep it real.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. And on that gig, like I say, you're an instrumentalist and lots of people say they're instrumentalists, multi-instrumentalists. Sorry. But you are sort of the most extreme multi-instrumentalist I've probably ever met or maybe ever will meet. Like, so
I'm sorry.
Oh man. It's good to be rare and one of a kind. You know what I mean?
Oh man. Well, yeah. People were like, how'd you learn how to do all that? I was like, man, do you have any idea how much time and like rooms I spent by myself practicing? You know, it's like, it's kind of, it's just woodshedding, you know, just like, and I would always like just have this interest to, I would see like a, like an old concert footage or something like that. I'm like, I want to do that. Why don't I just do it? And it's like that, just like dumb childlike way of going about it. Of being like, oh, I should do that. And, you know, I don't know if I should have, but nevertheless, it's worked out for me. It's been kind of like my thing, you know, just the sort of like, you know, Swiss Army knife approach.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously. And so you play fiddle, pedal steel, keyboards, accordion, mandolin, harmonica on that gig. Maybe once in a while, some guitar, but.
Yeah, every once in a while.
What's your real instrument?
It's so funny, man. I try to, I mean, God. I mean, mostly, I mean, I'd say at the end of the day, if someone just had to like put a gun in my head, I'd say I'm a fiddle player usually. Yeah. I mean, it's like the most torturous instrument ever. Like it drives me crazy. I kind of halfway don't even enjoy it. It's just such an exercise in self-flagellation. You're just constantly reminded of like, oh God, it's just like that little bit of flat or sharp to get right where you want it. And then you're not even in the realm of, you know, voicing and, you know, performance and, you know, how I'm phrasing this or that, you know, so it's just really hard to do really well. And it's just, it constantly reminds you of that. So that would kind of be like sort of what I am at the end of the day. I mean, steel guitar is just like one of my total loves because you can do so much on that thing that you just can't do with any other instrument, you know? So it's pedal steel is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I would have guessed pedal steel. So what did you start on?
Like in
your first instrument,
my very first instrument. Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that piano lessons as a kid.
Okay.
Which I promptly, you know, forgot all that. Piano lessons. And then my first like real love of music would have been drums, actually. That was really like, I want to do this. And then I was able to actually do it and like do it well. And that I was really into it for a long time. So when I listen to a song, the first thing I listen to is like, what do the drums sound like? You know, what's the snare drum sound like? What's the kick drum sound like? You know, that's my, you know, first go-to. So
that's interesting. Yeah, me too. I'm a frustrated drummer. I played in high school and I was in marching band. And, I actually taught marching percussion for like 11 years.
You know, all the paradiddles.
Right. Yeah. It still, you know, doesn't necessarily apply to a country gig. I don't know. Or any gig for that matter. No. Maybe Chicago. Definitely, you know, but that's so interesting. I think also as a producer for me too, it's like if you're doing any kind of rock or pop music or whatever, anything, it's like the drums are so important to get that right first. If you don't have good sounding drums,
no,
the track's just going to suck.
Absolutely. Well, when you turn the volume down, when you're like mixing, I like to mix all different kinds of ways, but when you turn the volume down really low, what are the two things you hear? Drums and vocals. That's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about drums and vocals.
So you had piano lessons, but it's definitely not sort of your prominent instrument. I mean, I'm not trying to say that like I've played a million shows with you. That's definitely not your instrument. No, I'm saying like you sound fine. You sound great, you know, but I know that through rehearsals and stuff, I know that's not your strongest like thing that
you're
the most comfortable with. Yet it's a big part of the Dwight Show.
It is. I'm very good at Dwight Yoakam keyboards. Keyboard parts. I know, you know, it's funny. I can't like, you know, I can, you know, improvise pretty freely, you know, like on guitar, on mandolin, fiddle, steel guitar, all that. But, you know, keyboards, I kind of have to think about what I'm doing. And, you know, you start getting, you know, black keys and I'm like, all right, wait. I didn't sign up for all this. You know, it's like, I just kind of have to spend more time with it, learn it. I just don't practice it as much as I should, you know. And also, you know, certainly with the Dwight gig, you know, the keyboard parts, it's like they're so country specific, You know, I mean, they're like Floyd Kramer guitar parts, basically. I mean, sorry, piano parts. Uh-huh. I mean, you're playing like classic old school honky tonk piano, or you're playing like classic rock organ. And that's pretty much it.
Right, right, right. So. Yeah. And he does want to hear the parts from the record, you know?
Yes.
And that makes it, you know, that makes it easier, you know?
Just, oh yeah. And they're really great parts.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of time on them. They're simple. They're accurate. They're exactly what the song needs. And you don't need to go like screwing them up.
Yeah.
the beauty in the, I mean, they're not all simple, but there's like a beauty in like, just like the classic old school style of not overplaying and not too many voicings and stuff and just keeping it very straight ahead country.
Yeah. I always think too, it's like, you know, somebody spent a lot of time in that studio making decisions to make mm-hmm. everything work together. And if you start screwing with the parts, then now this part not going to work anymore. And like, just honor the parts, you know, and I've really loved that about Dwight.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And on, especially on those, certainly on his early records, everything is so clear and clean. And like, there's so much negative space in those records. It's like, man, I can hear a pin drop in this record in the room just about, because there's so much room and space, and that's what makes them so special, I think.
Yeah. And the odd thing about you, this is another thing I feel like is pretty cool as a guy who likes to talk about college and going to school and stuff and kind of values education. You have a master's degree in Southern studies.
Yes.
Which is not about music necessarily. I mean, I'm sure there's music in the, but you don't have a music degree, yet you have a master's degree, yet you're making your living. But I love that in a way, you know, it's like, you know, it's pretty, I mean, first of all, Southern studies, only very few places probably offer that as a major, as a degree. Like, maybe talk about that for a little bit, but it also obviously relates to the music that you're playing and that you're into. And you can, I was listening to some of your music that you've composed, and we'll get to that in a second too. And it's like, I can hear the Civil War in your playing.
That's hilarious.
And I wonder if that comes from your Southern studies.
You know, actually, I would say it's funny enough. So I wrote my master's thesis on Mississippi fiddle music. So it was about music for what I focused on, but it wasn't actually about necessarily like a performance thing. You know, it was more of like a, you know, academic approach to music, like a, you know, like an authorial kind of perspective, writing about music, you know. And it was cool because I'd always been a player, and I was like, wow, I kind of get to put on a different, you know, set of pants, you know, for this degree. And you know, it's actually really benefited me in really weird ways, and projects and approaches that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And it introduced me to a whole new like perspective of thinking, and like this sort of like modern Southern liberal perspective that it like really ingrained in me. And it's been a lens, you know, through which to look at or to listen to music and to look at the, you know, historicity behind all the music as well. So it's actually benefited me in totally weird ways. You know, I don't know if did that answer any questions? Was that?
Yeah. Clear? No, I think
rambling.
No, it's great. It's fascinating. I think it's awesome because it also makes you really interesting to talk to.
Well, thank you.
You know, on the road, that's an important skill to have. The hang, you know.
Yeah, so the hang is mucho important. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No, go ahead. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, it makes it a lot of fun. And it's a different perspective than a lot of musicians, I guess, is what I'm, you know, we don't, you know, coming from a more academic place, you know. So anyway,
yeah.
Good on you. So you get done with college, and what brought you out to LA?
Well, I met my wife, and she is a actor and a writer, creator. I mean, she's also, you know, great songwriter, great singer, all that stuff. She's just like the most talented, creative person I know. And, you know, we kind of were looking at it, and she had lived in New York before. Like, she had a very untraditional path. She, you know, was cast and walked the line when she was in high school. And then so right after high school, she just moved to New York, you know, like she was an actor, you know, that's what she did.
Right.
So, you know, she always had the place in her heart for New York. And I was like, God, I just, you know, I play all these instruments. This is kind of hard to carry around New York. And, you know, she had lived there. And then we talked about maybe Nashville. We're like, well, that's not really good for her. We're like, what about LA? You know, we can both do something in LA. You know, they got movies there. Apparently they make movies there.
You think?
And yeah. So just a few, you know, so we just thought about what made the most sense. And I had, you know, it's funny, man, I had been all over the country, but I had actually never been to California before. And so I just literally moved to LA sight unseen. We had a friend of hers who was a photographer on a set of a film she was in. And, she had said, yeah, I'm, you know, subletting my apartment out. So we moved out, and yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. It was a big, bold, crazy move. And we did, and it, you know, it worked out. So.
it seems to have. Exactly. Yeah.
It's not always the case.
Yeah, that's for sure. LA eats up a lot of people. Ooh, and boy. Spits them out. Spits yeah. them back to the middle of the country.
Oh boy. That's a tough city, man. It's hard.
But your first gig out there was American Idol, basically.
Yes.
Right.
I was in the right place at the right time. Yeah. Doing the right thing. you know, it's like luck, you know. I mean, it definitely was fortunate and lucky, but you know, I mean, I did play pedal steel, which not a lot of people do, and I did move to LA, so you know, you had to do those two things in order to get the gig when I got it. So yeah, I, you know, at that time, that was 2012, in order to drum up work, I was just like putting ads on Craigslist and Backpage and stuff like that, and you know, all PG ads, of course. But legit, you know, musicians were doing that, you know, people were doing that and connecting. And I met tons of people doing this, like a bunch of really cool, talented people who just were looking for a steel guitar player or looking for a fiddle player. And, so anyhow, one of those things was, I got an email that said, you know, are you available on blank, 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 you know, for pedal steel? If so, call this number. And I read it to my wife. She's like, oh yeah, that's, you need to respond immediately. The brief emails are the best.
Right.
Those are the real emails. And I was like, okay. So I called up this number, and this, you know, someone answered, and it's like, I got a call from, you know, Ernie. And it's like, oh yeah, I'll patch you through. So then this guy came on the line, and he goes, yeah, so are you available, you know, this date? And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, okay. You actually play pedal steel, right? You don't just own one. That's like the most LA question ever.
Oh my God.
you have to ask, you know?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do. And, you know, we chatted a few more questions, and I said, you know, I mean, is this for like a recording session, or what's this for? And he goes, no, son, this is for American Idol. And I was like, oh God, yes. Okay. So that's how that happened. You know, wow. And it was wild and crazy, and it, you know, totally changed my life. And that's actually the producers, creators, whatever of the show, the management team was represented Lisa Marie Presley. And that's how I got the Lisa Marie gig, was wow, through that, because they were like watching the show or something like that. And they was like, oh, there's a young dude playing steel guitar. Let's give him a shout. He plays other stuff, and looked me up, and, you know, got in touch, and that's how that happened. So,
oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. Craigslist used to be this magical place, man. It
was great.
Yeah. I got tons of sessions, and I had like weird experiences too. Like one time I answered an ad for smooth jazz I need smooth jazz bass player on a song.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, I can do that. You know, so I put it up and I was like a couple days late. They hit me back and were like, oh, is this Eric Baines? Oh, I used you on this other record. Sorry, I already got a guy for this one. But, and I'm like, this is the smallest world ever. You know, that's yes. a star thing to happen over Craigslist. And then another time I got a production client, like a songwriter, and he knew this other person that I had worked for. And it was just this crazy, cool spot for a while that was getting me a lot of work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would just repost the ads just every week. They expired after what, like 5 days or something like that.
Right.
And I would just set reminders on my phone and I would repost them. And I mean, I got to tell you, man, like you're saying, I got like tons of work. Like there was a golden age where it wasn't a bunch of weirdos. It was like really genuinely people trying to connect. And I mean, I would get these really oddball sessions though. I'd just like show up at some house and play fiddle for a song. And I remember one time I was doing a session for this dude and I showed up at the house and it wasn't even that guy's house. He was the session was at the piano player's house and the piano player has turned out after the fact, we got to be friends. Like he's one of my good friends now.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I use him all the time for stuff to record stuff. Sasha Smith, man, he's amazing. So yeah, it's so weird how stuff happens.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. And that's also very LA there too. It's like so many studios are in people's houses and, you know, you just show up to some weird house. And I remember I auditioned actually for Robin Thicke back before he was huge at like his dad's house or something where he had a studio set up in like the living room or maybe it was even his house. I don't know, but it was this.
Oh yeah.
It's a house, but you walk in and there's like a console and like it was a studio and he's sitting there and he's like, yeah, here's my new song and working the console and like, here, just play along. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I didn't get the gig, but whatever. I thought it sounded great. You know,
I'm sure you did.
Wow. That's amazing. How would you like to hang out and talk about music? Or discuss something you've heard on the podcast? How about learning some new techniques on the bass? Do you have a new song and would like some feedback from an experienced and professional songwriter? You can do all of that and more at golive.ly. I'm offering private bass lessons and songwriting feedback in a private setting over Zoom. Just search for me, Eric Baines, at golive.ly, pick a date and time, and schedule a lesson. It's that easy. I can teach you advanced bass techniques, music theory, improvisation, or we can talk about how to prepare for a gig, the best thing to wear to an audition, or the most important things to know about living on a tour bus. If you have a new song that isn't quite working, and you need some feedback from someone who's written and co-written hundreds of songs for artists, TV, film, and video games, I can help you with that too. All skill levels are welcome. Search for Eric Baines at golive.ly. golive.ly. And I can't wait to meet you. I'd like to take a second and thank you for listening to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast. Getting the word out is a vital part of what it takes to keep this show on the road, and the easiest way to help is to subscribe wherever you listen, and if you have an extra minute or two, please leave a review. You can also follow our page on Facebook, which is the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast, or follow me on Instagram at Dive Bar Rockstar. Okay, enough begging. I hope you're having a great time, and once again, thank you for listening. So how was that experience? You were on the original American Idol before it's on like Fox now or something, right? Like you were...
Man, I have no idea.
I think that was like the original run, right?
But no, it was on... I thought it was on Fox. Yeah. That when I... Wait, what now?
Or maybe...
I don't remember what station it was on, network it was on. I don't
know. Well, who were the judges? That would be the tell.
It changed over years, man. Okay. All right.
Was Simon still there?
No, Simon was not there. It was Randy Jackson was there. Steven Tyler, Keith Urban was a judge. Jennifer Lopez was a judge. Nicki Minaj was a judge. All kinds of, and it was crazy. It was pretty amazing. And those people were all actually like, they would just be backstage with us, like to walk out, you know, mm-hmm. They're always super nice.
That's yeah. And that's gotta be another cool part about that gig. Like you get to kind of schmooze with other people that could do things for you. I mean, obviously you got another gig out of it, but
yeah, well there's that. And then, you know, all the other musicians, you know, you would start working, you know, hanging out and it's like, well, I need so-and-so on a track, you know? So, you know, when I was doing it for a while, Teddy Campbell was the drummer.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want Pedal Steel on a track. Would you come to my studio and do that? So I'm like, wow. I mean, just how things would transpire like that. It was really cool.
That's pretty awesome. And do you think, I often wonder, like, you're so Southern. Like, you know, yes. Everyone can hear you talk. You know, yeah. Like, you know, you're legit from the South, you know. Yes. Do you think that, but you play pedal steel and you play fiddle. So you think that's been an advantage? Whereas if you played saxophone, maybe it wouldn't have been in LA. I don't know.
Like, white country dude from Mississippi plays fiddle and pedal steel. I mean, it's, you know, people need to have a box to put you in.
Yeah.
You know, just in like life in general. So I guess it was a good box to be put in. You know, I mean, it worked out. You know, I mean, people weren't, it didn't seem like, it wasn't confusing.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Of course you do these like country instruments. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. 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 That's funny. Yeah. Cause I came out as a very white suburban dude wanting to play R&B, you know, and like, that's confusing. but it's all worked out, I guess. I think that's like the thing about the Dwight gig is like, it was the least confusing gig I'd ever done with my particular look.
being white.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm a white guy doing a white gig. It makes
yes.
sense. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yes. Yeah. You finally look the part, you know? Yes.
Oh, yes. That's what we've been looking for.
So you've done a ton of library music.
Yes.
And, which is kind of, because that's the other thing I feel like about you. You didn't set out to be a road dog. You know, you're more into the studio stuff and I know your passion really is in film and TV, like scoring and stuff, correct?
Yeah, man. I mean, I love playing on the road. It's fun to go play out in front of people and, you know, have that energy and stuff. But, you know, there is definitely something, you know, it's pretty nice to, you know, sleep in your own bed at night. You know, you know, I do. And what I do love about, especially like scoring and stuff is that you get to really create something that's never been before. So, you know, you're playing out on the road. And unless you're just doing totally improvised music every night and like some jazz or jam band kind of situation, you know, you're pretty much, you got the script, you know, and you're kind of sticking to it and you're, you know, and that doesn't mean that the things don't, you know, there's no variation. It doesn't mean that there aren't audibles and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, certainly on the Dwight gig, there's audibles, you know,
right.
And,
right.
And that's the best part of it. Like when he starts throwing audibles, you're like, all right, we're doing this tonight. Let's do it. Hope I know this song.
I know. Yeah.
But that's what makes it fun, you know? And, but the cool thing about like, especially like film composition and TV stuff is that you get to bring something totally unique, and the weirder, the better, you know, usually the more unique, the better. Cause you know, every, you know, director, producer, all that, they all want to have this, they all want their show to have the cool, unique sound. You know, it's like when Stranger Things popped on the scene, you know, you would have thought modular synths had just been invented.
Right.
You know? It's like, listen how cool and synthy this is. It's like, yeah, this people have been doing this since the 70s, dude. This is not new. They're just kind of like not even rediscovered. They're just, you know, the first that you've heard it in a popular sense.
Right.
So that's kind of easily my favorite part. And like, how can I make this sound in the most unique way? Like I'll, you know, get, you know, like violins and violas and, you know, play them with a drumstick and stuff, you know, like on the fretting thing, and make scratchy noises and stuff. Because so much of, especially modern composition, is not so much always, you know, like melodic, as it can also just be like very like, you know, moods and tones and textures. And, you know, it's a texture more than it is a, you know, a song, so to speak.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, like a full melody of a sweeping thing. And obviously there's films and shows where that's the thing, but and so much now it's just like, we want this like weird ambient synth guitar thing, you know, it's nondescript mood and vibe to be matched. So that's a fun thing for me. So,
and you do it really well.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was listening to this, some of the score of, the Showtime show, The Good Lord Bird.
Oh, thank you, man.
And man, it's just so vibey and cool. And it's cool, like you're saying, like, I think what's unique about what you do is like, it's all organic stuff, but you're hearing crazy things that you've never heard before, but it's all real instruments, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, or it's at least supposed to sound a lot like a real instrument. You know, like for a piano, I'm just usually going to, you know, that's going to be a plug-in, because that's, there's so many options.
Right.
I have a piano, but you know, it sometimes makes more sense. So I can go back and change things that are, it's like, man, I don't have to play the piano part again. That's a lot of work. And there's plugins that you can't tell the difference. So why would I be the discerning one to try to tell the difference? but it true on the organic thing. And what I especially did with that score a lot was I would take all these, you know, organic instruments and kind of like shape them, and I would run them through filters and you know, a bunch of like echoes and reverbs and delays and all these, you know, tremolo on unusual instruments that you wouldn't traditionally put. It's not just like a tremolo guitar, it's like, what about tremolo acoustic guitar, you know, stuff like that. Like, how can we make it different and unique and weird and bring this unique voice with these traditional instruments and put it in a modern context? So,
well, I think you nailed it.
Oh, well, thank you so much, man.
I'm not like a film score critic or anything, but it's really fun to listen to, you know?
Oh, well, thank you.
Which, you know, it says something, I think, because it's all the same instruments that we've heard for centuries.
Yes.
In a way that's like interesting to listen to, you know, like something new, and fresh and different and vibey. And it's cool. I kind of get what you're saying. It's kind of like a place where a composer can be as most creative as possible, where there's not a lot of places that exist like that in the music industry anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, like with the occasional like weird kind of like sounds and like pop music and stuff, you know, if you're listening to like a Billie Eilish song or something like that, it's like, oh man, that's some cool, weird kind of stuff floating around in the ether back there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not super common. You know, I mean, I feel like a lot of times on pop tracks, it's actually going to be your weirdest and most creative stuff, because they're always kind of like looking for like a new sound to like sample and just have like kind of repeating in a track.
And I know, because I was there a lot too. It's like, you do a lot of stuff from the road, or at least you were, because that's got to be tricky when you're dealing with a show and deadlines, yet you've got gigs to do as well. but you've managed to kind of work out a road rig and do a lot of recording as you go.
Yeah. It's just like the bag of stuff to lug around. And also helps that on, especially like the Dwight gig, there's a tons of instruments floating around that I could, you know, I'm like, oh man, if I need a guitar, I can go grab one and, you know, take it to the hotel room and record it. And, you know, that's just normal, you know, backstage even. Like, right. All right, guys, I'm going to the venue early. I'm going to go to the bathroom and lock myself in there and find the only quiet space in this weird hall or something, you know, and make it work. You know, you just have to be creative. And I feel like when you start worrying about like, oh, is this space perfectly acoustically, you know, tuned, and does it sound perfect and right? It's like, well, no, but, you know, neither did, you know, the most classic recording studio, with the exception of all the, you know, big stuff in like New York and LA and stuff in Nashville. Obviously those studios are pretty perfect, but
right,
you know, like Sun Studios, you know, is not perfect.
Right.
And that's what makes it cool.
And that's what becomes a sound.
Yes, that's the sound. You know, yeah, Royal Studios in Memphis, you know, like that's the sound, you know. So
yeah.
Fame and you know, and Muscle Shoals, that's the sound. And that's what's cool about it. So
yeah. And that, which also lends itself to what you do, because you're looking for weird sounds or different sounds or unique sounds. I shouldn't say weird.
Yes. No, I go for weird. Well, it's funny, like with drums, you know, like I don't really go for like perfect crisp drum sound or something like that, because I just don't do that kind of stuff, you know. Maybe I should, I don't know, but anyhow, I don't. Yeah. And I'm just like, I just want it to sound weird and thuddy and, you know, mostly lean on the room mic or something, you know, like what can I do that's going to be kind of like old school and different, and but you can kind of like, you know, totally smash it and make it loud enough as it is in, you know, modern recordings, but still like an old school thing. So
right. So how much do you take on the road? I guess the thing is like you don't need that much stuff either anymore, which is kind of awesome.
Oh, it's the best. God, I'm looking at a Universal Audio Apollo Twin. Mm-hmm. The greatest invention ever made.
I know, right?
Oh, it's the best. I mean, it's like, first of all, I mean, how often do I record more than, and I can chain in more. When I do drums here at the house, I've got, you know, strips that have, I can, you know, like digital ends and stuff like that. But I mean, that's my primary thing, because it's so simple. I'm just like, all right, I just unplug it, plug it back up and take it with me. And I need a hard drive, a laptop, a little bitty keyboard, and, you know, that, and I'm pair of headphones. And I mean, you can plug anything into it. You know, if I need like a guitar, a steel guitar, or a microphone or something like that, I've done that too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can overdub stuff. And if I need to, you know, program parts, I can do that, or at least mock something up that I can then go back and record organically if I need to. So
right.
A lot of options. And I can also record just tons of stuff, like kitchen sink it. And then I can take my rig out and just edit tracks as well. So I can then do editing and like light, basically get it close to mixed. And then, you know, I've done tons of work that otherwise would have just been, you know, wasted time.
So, right.
So it's, you know, either recording or editing, mixing. So cleaning things up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You were always working.
I try to always be working.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's impressive though. It's like, you know, it's so easy to fall into. Well, I mean, now that we have babies and stuff, for me, I'm like the first couple days is just sleeping. But that's getting better. You know, the kids get older, and
oh yeah,
that it's getting a lot easier to get a nice sleep. You know, but I don't know. I still enjoy the quiet.
Oh yeah. There's a quiet factor. And then, but then, you know, I feel so guilty and bad about it sometimes. I can't even enjoy it. I'm just like, oh, my poor wife, she's sitting there. She's back at the loony bin.
Yeah.
Dealing with the dog and the kid and just like all this stuff. And, you know, It's, you know, it's just, it's a lot of work, man. The kid thing, it's the most rewarding, and it's also a lot of work.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking that earlier when you told the story about moving your wedding too. It's like, it takes a unique woman to date or marry a person like us. You know, it's a lot of stuff you got to put up with, and you know, they've got to, you know, be flexible, and you know, I don't know, you got to support some weird stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's like a household with two artists is that's hard, man. Just to balance it all. It's beautiful, and it's like, you know, you're both kind of like going through different, you know, creative processes and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, but I love like, I'll pop by, like I just did earlier, and she's like writing something, and she's like, let me run this by you. She's reading, I'm just like dying laughing. I'm like, oh my God, that's so funny. That's so great. And I was like, you're brilliant. You're wonderful. I'm like, all right, love you. Now I'm going to talk to Eric. She says hello.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, or I said hi to you.
So, you know, it's that kind of thing that I love, you know, getting those little snippets of, you know, what's going on in her mind and stuff as well. So that's a beautiful thing.
Well, I'm trying something different on this episode, something new.
Oh, wow. All right.
I was like, and people have suggested this in the past, but I guess it took me a while to really develop certain things, but I'm sure because your wife's an actress, you've seen Inside the Actor's Studio.
Yes.
And I'm trying to come up with my own set of questions to sort of end all the show with, you know.
Yeah.
That I think they're interesting. And so, you know, answer these as long as the answer or as short as answer you want. And you know, so anyway, you're the first. You're the guinea pig.
Wow. I'm so honored.
Yeah. And this is an interesting question, I think, for you, because I am not like this, but what time do you get up in the morning?
I get up right before my son wakes up. So I usually get up at 7 a.m. That's my time. We put him down at 7 and he gets up at 7. So I get up at 7.
Got you. Great. And not all, you know, I think that's an interesting question for musicians, because there's, you know, there's all kinds of answers, which people, I think you look at musicians and you're like, oh, these guys, they sleep till noon and they're out all night partying and, you know, whatever. And that's just a lot of times not the case.
No. And if I'm working on if I'm like scoring a film, that'll be like 5 o'clock, usually five or six. So I can get up early and get a bunch of stuff done. Cause you know, I like to do dad stuff. So
yeah. Nice. Cool. And the second question, did you graduate college?
Yes.
Yes. Good. We already talked about that. Okay. If a gig starts at 9, what time do you get there?
Is there a sound check?
Let's say no.
No sound check.
Like if it's like a bar gig or a wedding gig or a...
A bar gig, there's no sound check. And I just need... But I have to set all my stuff up.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well... It depends on how much I'm sorry, I'm ruining this question.
No, it's kind of interesting because you have so much gear.
I gotta set up. If I bring like pedal steel and fiddle, I mean, that takes me about between getting it out of the car, setting it up, getting it out of the way, tuning it up. I mean, that takes a solid 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to get there a little on the earlier side, you know, just like maybe have a beer and, you know, chit chat. You know, that kind of thing, but not too early. So, man, I'd say like 7. If the gig starts at 9, 7. Yeah. That feels respectful. That feels good.
Feels accurate.
Yeah, it feels accurate.
Excellent. Excellent. So, next question. How often do you listen to music for pleasure?
Oh, man. See, this varies a lot. I'm the worst. Sorry, I'm answering this question. Sorry. Okay, so in the car, I almost never listen to music.
Interesting.
And that, I mean, I'm talking 10-hour road trip. I don't listen to music. I sit there in silence, and I just drive. I don't. I don't. how often, man, almost very rarely, actually. It sounds more sad than it is. But if I'm on the road, I find that I listen to music more. Like when I'm out playing, I've been listening to more music because I've just been in the car and I've been just wanting to sing. So I'll just like listen to music to sing along to.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't want to sing, then I usually don't listen to music.
Yeah, I think that might be a pretty typical answer. You know, like I'm a lot the same way. I find having a kid lately has made me listen to more music because I want to expose him to things. And like,
yes,
now I'm just like, if we're making dinner or something, hey, Google, play blah, 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 you know, and just to try and keep that going, which has been good for me. Cause yeah, I think as a musician, it's like the last thing I want to do, which sounds sad, but at the same time, maybe it is sad. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, my wife, like she listens to music constantly. Like she like loves it and it's always finding something new and doing it. So, I mean, there's always music playing at my house that she's listening to usually. And I mean, she has a great taste of music, so I like it. Mm-hmm. But like, that's what, you know, that's like really her thing. Like she finds a lot of like solace and, you know, peace, listening to music. So I inadvertently listen to a lot with her, and she's always good about like setting the vibe. Like we're like cooking dinner. She'll like play something, you know, great. You know, she'll be like, listen to Miles Davis Radio or something like that, or like Billie Holiday or something, like classic, you know, trad jazz or some cool bebop or something like that. And, you know, for dinner and stuff, she's always doing that. And she's really, really good about exposing our son to music, which apparently I'm terrible at.
That's cool. Well, at least one of you are doing it. That's awesome.
Exactly.
And three more questions and then I'll let you go. I know I'm taking up a bunch of your time, but
oh, no. Great. Let's keep going.
Okay. Do you still get nervous before you go on stage?
It depends on the gig, mm-hmm. but generally speaking, I don't like to be so unprepared that I'm nervous. You know, I like to be prepared, and when I'm prepared, I'm not nervous. And maybe a little excited, maybe like a little like, you know, it's funny. I actually get less nervous in front of like a huge show.
Right.
Like if I'm playing in front of 15 people at like my local bar here in town, I would be 10 million times more nervous because I'm like, they're actually like really paying attention to me. They're going to hear what I'm doing.
Right. You know,
I'm going to have to, these are my friends. They're going to like troll me if I play horribly. But you know, I mean, a huge show, it's like it's just so big, you can't even feel just like the intimacy of it. So so not usually that nervous because I'm usually prepared.
That's brilliant. That's something that hasn't come up on this show yet, which is really interesting because it's something I say all the time, like how do you overcome nerves and be prepared? That's exactly right, because I've been known to be accused of over-preparing, mainly by my wife, you know, who has to be like, why are you spending 8 hours working?
You know the songs.
Exactly. Yeah. Why are you spending 8 hours on this wedding band gig? Well, because I don't want to suck even then. You know, I don't, you know, and that's when I know everything and I don't have to think. I just go in and play and no time to be nervous. So what song do you never get sick of playing?
My current gig, Ain't That Lonely Yet.
Nice.
Man, I love that song so much. I love the chords. I could just sit there and just snack on those chords all night long, man. I love the changes. I love it, man. It's so great. I love the song. I love the vibe. I love everything about that song. It's fantastic.
That's great. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I love that song. And you start that song. Like, that's a very exposed song for you on keyboards, organ.
Yes. 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 Yeah. That's not a fun one to screw up.
Yeah. Right. All right. And last question, do you feel like you've made it, quote unquote?
In certain aspects of my career, I do feel like I have. And then in some, I don't. you know, like maybe as a touring musician, as a like a live road performing dude, I feel like I've made it because I've gotten the opportunity to play with just so many artists that are like, you know, heroes and so impressive. And, you know, I've gotten to do that thing. I've gotten to, you know, travel to all 50 states. I've gotten to travel the world. I've had such cool opportunities. I got to live and support my life, you know, doing primarily that for, you know, the majority of my adult life. So I'd say in that sense, you know, I, you know, quote, moved to LA and, you know, I got a great gig and got to play on some huge stuff. And so I would say in that aspect, I have, you know, in like a more composition sense, I wouldn't maybe feel the same way because it's like those, the gigs are just more few and far between, you know, they're just more, there's, you know, there's only so many films. There's only so many TV shows. There's a lot of composers. A lot of them are very good. A lot of them have been doing it for a very long time and they're very talented. And, you know, you have to really, even the most talented composers who've done tons of stuff, they're still fighting for gigs. You still have to claw to get those. So I don't know if anyone ever really, unless you're like one of the top, you know, 5 to 10 people who, you know, who's having their door beat down, you know, I don't know if anyone would ever just about feel like they've made it. I don't know. That's a really hard business to make it in, you know?
Right. Right.
So in some ways, yes, in some ways, no, for my awful answer.
It's an amazing answer.
I think back to that SNL skit where, where Will Ferrell's Harry Carey, he's like, it's yes or no question. If you were a hot dog and you're starving, would you eat yourself? It's a yes or no question. It's so easy a baby can answer it. So,
oh man, that's great. Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, people look at you when you're on big stages and they're like, oh, this guy's made it, you know, and to get the real thoughts from people that are accused of that on the regular basis is, you know, it's generally, to me, it's always an interesting answer.
Well, I mean, in the sense of the opportunities that I've done, but you know, I mean, you know, things evaporate overnight, you know, you never know. I mean, you know, everyone who I've ever played with who could just say like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, I don't know who to call now, you know, like what would I then do? You know, who would I play with then? You know, so then I maybe wouldn't feel like I'd made it.
Right.
You know, it's yeah.
So. Back to Craigslist.
Yeah.
You're only one gig away from Craigslist all the time.
Boy, that's so true, man. Oh, yes.
Well, this has been awesome, dude. Like,
this has been wonderful.
I appreciate you coming on and talking and sharing and you know, and being open and you're an awesome dude. I definitely miss the hang and miss playing with you every night.
Likewise, the same, man. This has been so much fun, and we need to do this more often.
That's the thing. Like you, like a lot of other guests, there's just so much to talk about, and so yeah, we'll have to do it again.
Yeah, you got 7 more terabytes, so that's what we can do.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you, Eric, man. This is so much fun. Die by
Rockstar. Well, I certainly had a great time as well. I had a lot of fun, man. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I liked when he said, you say no too many times and people quit asking, because I think that's the second phase of networking that we don't always talk about. It's not just about meeting people. It's about keeping yourself in the forefront of their minds, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Another way to say it. It's important to stay in touch with people or they learn to live without you. So you want them to think of you as soon as that phone rings and they either need a sub or someone asks them, hey, do you know a bass player? And it's easier now more than ever because of social media, but I still think that nothing beats getting in front of people. You know, go to shows, get together for lunch or coffee and find out where musicians hang out and show up, because people are going to call the players that they trust, not only to play well, but be nice, you know, normal people. And every time you send a sub or recommend somebody, you're really putting your job on the line a bit. So you got to make sure that who you're sending is going to represent you well. And so it's important for you to go and show people who you are and show them that they're that you're a trustworthy and decent human so that they're not afraid to call you and send you to represent them. I also like what he said about how being prepared eliminates the nerves. I think that is so true. And I usually talk about being prepared in the context of getting more gigs, you know, because like the players that show up prepared will get hired sometimes over better players because what's the use in having a monster player who doesn't know your songs? But the other reason to be prepared is to calm your nerves, especially if you're a particularly nervous person or, you know, if you deal with anxiety, because usually you're nervous because you're afraid you're going to screw up. So make sure that you've done everything in your power to prevent that from happening. I try to show up on a new gig sounding like I've been playing the music for 20 years. That's like always my goal, especially if there's no rehearsals or very little rehearsals. And it's the only way that you can really enjoy it. You know, I want to enjoy the performance. I want to give a good performance. I don't want to just be worried about screwing up and in my head and just worried about getting the music right. It's really not a fun way to do gigs. Linda Perry actually came in on Lisa Marie's second album called Now What? She actually co-wrote 7 songs on that record. American Idol was originally on Fox, and now it's on ABC, and I might add, the show is unbelievably good now, especially without Simon. Audibles are when an artist just calls out a song on stage, and it's usually not on the set list. Some cover bands don't even use set lists, and it's just all audibles, and some artists build sections of their show that are made just for audibles. Like, from these next 3 songs, I'm just going to decide when I get there. And the list of questions at the end of Inside the Actor's Studio, that show that I'm trying to emulate, was inspired by Bernard Pivo, but host James Lipton mistakenly thought it was Pivo's idea. The idea was actually originated by French writer Marcel Proust and was called the Proust Questionnaire. And by the way, let me know if you have any questions that you'd like to add to my list. I'm still developing it, so tell me some of the questions that you'd like to ask everybody. And also tell me some of your answers. Hit me up on social media and let me know how you would answer some of these questions. All right, well, that's my show, and I hope you had a really great time, and I'll talk at you later. I'm a die-bar rock star. Wow, you've made it to the end. I'm hoping it's because you completely enjoyed yourself and are now filled with knowledge and inspiration to move forward with your dreams. If that is the case and you would like to stay informed of new episodes, live events, and general news, please go to divebarrockstar.com and sign up for the mailing list. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or complaints about anything you hear on the show, please email me at fanmail@divebarrockstar.com and you may even end up on the show. We at the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast, with all of our hearts, thank you for listening, and remember, it's all about dreams.